Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our Monday evening Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by a full panel of experts here tonight. To my sides up top here, we've got John Tytel and Joby Fortson. Directly below me, joining us from bracketeer.org, is Rocco Miller. To his sides, we've got David Dorman and a picture of the puppet, David Griggs.
I'm an expert.
We have five experts and a puppet. This is the podcast where we go over everything and anything that's going on in college basketball, in the college basketball world. We are recording a little after almost 9:15 p.m. Eastern here on Monday, December 20th. And unfortunately, we've got a lot of off-the-court news to begin tonight with. And we have seemed to have regressed back about 365 days to where we were a year ago, as it was starting a little bit last week, but now we are seeing games canceled left, right, up, down, games being rescheduled, new opponents being found, and then getting canceled again, and then another new opponent found, as was Duke's case this weekend. But COVID is rearing its ugly head again in the college basketball world. And Rocco, let me start with you. I know you've been following a lot of these cancellations. In fact, follow him on Twitter if you want to see what games are canceled and not. Is this what we're back to, do you think? I mean, you think this is what we're going back to the rest of the season? Do you think this is a temporary little hiccup? What are you seeing here?
You know, the way the rules are written right now, I think it's just the start, unfortunately. I think what you're going to start to see in the next 7 to 10 days, in fact, out here in the Pac-12, which probably may be the first league, if not the Big East, because they're already working on it too, going to have to adjust the forfeiture rules that I think everybody followed each other on in terms of conference play. But yeah, these games on the fly, I just think with the cases and the protocols in terms of close contact, basketball teams are not that big. It's like 12 to 15 players on a team, maybe 12 travel. If you're coming back from a road trip or if you're on a road trip, you know, like one of several examples, UC Irvine got all the way out to Akron for a game yesterday. Couldn't even get over to Buffalo for a game tomorrow because something happened in between where they had a positive test today. That's going to be continue to be an issue. And I don't know what can be done because I think, you know, not that I'm a health expert, but you look at what's going on globally with the trend of the cases just skyrocketing. You've seen that happen here in our country. So it's kind of inevitable in a sad way. But at the same time, with so many people vaccinated already and with a lot of asymptomatic, perhaps there's some opportunities to get more flexible and creative. And the other side of that is the shutdowns, I don't think, will be as long. We already saw Chicago State yesterday have to cancel their game, but today they're already able to get back on the court tomorrow for an Iowa State game. And so I think you won't see like the whole month long pauses like we saw last year, which is good, which is a nice benefit. But there's a lot to sort out, and people are gonna be working across all these holidays to figure this out.
Yeah, and I got to tell you that, you know, I'm not a health expert either, and I think absolutely the health of everybody involved in these games is extremely important. However, if you have a team full of vaccinated players, and as an example, this is what I read occurred at the Memphis, Tennessee cancellation, that one player from Memphis woke up the morning of the game with symptoms. They did a quick test on him. He was positive. They immediately not only ruled out his roommate just because he was rooming with him, but pretty much the rest of the team because of contact tracing, because they had been in close contact with him. Well,
that's right.
Joby, let me ask you this. You know, if the entire team is vaccinated, now I'm going to presume they are vaccinated, do we really need to shut down these players that are vaccinated that have no symptoms just because they were in close contact within the last couple of days with somebody who tested positive at this stage in the virus?
I say this repeatedly. I got my COVID PhD the same place all of our listeners did for the most part. So I want to stress that I speak not from, you know, a health expert point of view, but I actually think what the NFL is doing is the right move. And it's a little bit of see no evil, hear no evil, you know, component. But the fact is, you're hitting on the, if you are vaccinated, yes, you can catch the Omicron variant by all, you know, by all instances, even instances, even with a booster, people are getting it. But by the same token, hospitalizations are widely, even among the non-vaccinated, hospitalizations are not spiking, specifically the intensive care. That doesn't mean we're out of the woods. It doesn't mean, oh, it's don't worry about, oh, it's just the such and such. But if you are vaccinated, the chance of severe infection is lessened. Now, by the same token, this is about the, at the end of the day, this isn't, they are not professionals. If someone wants to opt out because, you know, they have someone at home that they want to protect, et cetera, then by all means, scholarship maintained, do what you need to do for yourself. But as far as the games themselves, I think that'll be a very small number, but it should be a viable option for those individuals. But for the those who do not go that route, who are vaccinated, I truly believe they, with an asymptomatic, you know, regimen that should be probably independently verified, then they should be able to go forward. Much like that is essentially what the NFL is doing to a degree. And I think it would be good. And I think you'll see conferences adopt that because the NFL is the leader in sports. You'll see certain conferences adopt that. And I think it's not a bad idea to do so.
Yeah, and yeah, and Tytel, let me ask you, I think that's a good point, Joey, you just made. We may see conferences adopting it. Wouldn't it be nice if the NCAA had a overall governing body that covered all of college basketball that could make these decisions so we could have uniformity? We could call it the National Collegiate Athletic Association or something like that, give it a president, name him something like Mark Emmert or something. But, you know, is this a problem here?
Yes, I do like uniformity. I do not know if I want the NCAA ruling on stuff that affects a player or fan's health rather than having a health expert, which none of us are, as we've said repeatedly. I think the word I want to focus on was Rocco's word of inevitable. Like, if it's inevitable that like people are going to get sick or end up in hospitals, then I wouldn't mind following the NHL's policy. They've had a couple teams who just said, we're just shutting down for the rest of 2021. We'll check back in 2 weeks and see where we're at. It's a drastic measure, but if it can save lives or keep people out of the hospital, great. If it's something that, like Joby said, it's not a lot of hospitalizations or serious ones, and the players are willing to opt in, then by all means, have the games. I don't know if we need fans there, if that's a huge other risk. Not that I enjoyed watching games in empty arenas, but I think we need to put all the options on the table because it seems like we're going backwards, not forwards.
Yeah, and you know, it's also a shame that there isn't enough money in college basketball to actually afford to have those health experts on staff in places. You know, it's a real shame that, you know, we're just letting some conference commissioners make decisions that all contradict each other. But unfortunately, that seems to be the world of what college basketball has been like, not only with the coronavirus, but with a lot of other issues. And Dorman, let me bring you in here because the other news coming out today came out of North Carolina State, where the NCAA's new appellate panel, I guess it is, that has tried to expedite some of these violations issues, came out with its first ruling on NC State. No postseason ban, but a bunch of scholarship reductions and a one-year show cause for Mark Godfrey and a few other things today. Your thoughts on that, what came out?
Yes, Chad. The first thing I look at when these comes out are the postseason bans. I hate when the kids get the postseason bans because the kids that are there currently had nothing to do with this situation. If the coach is in charge somewhere else and you want to take him, I'm all that. I don't like it, but I'll live with it. Do not penalize the kids who are at these schools that had nothing to do with this. If it was 5, 10, 12 years ago, I don't even like limiting the scholarships because it hurts them indirectly, probably. But no postseason ban. Let these kids play basketball. They had nothing to do with why they're in trouble.
Griggs, do you agree with him, especially in light of the fact that Oklahoma State is on a postseason ban for similar circumstances?
Yeah, well, in general, yeah. I'm against a postseason ban if the players that are banned had nothing to do with the violation. I think we can all agree that there's something categorically unfair about that. What happened at Oklahoma State was that they they were on a ban and then they appealed it, knowing, and they did it at a time where they knew that it would still be under review. So they were able to play in the tournament last year. They did that knowing full well that what the results would be if they lost the appeal, which they did. I kind of feel like Oklahoma State didn't do their due diligence in explaining to their players, hey, you know, there's a chance that you're going to be on a postseason ban. And it basically eliminated any chance of them transferring or going somewhere else because of the ban. But I don't know. I kind of am with Dorman on that in general. I don't like – it's not that I'm against the postseason ban. It's that I'm against the postseason ban that punishes people that had nothing to do with the violation. A show cause for Mark Godfrey, no issues there. NC State certainly shouldn't appeal that. They couldn't if they wanted to, but – it seems all right. A year's probation.
And that's I have to go. That's the whole point of this new panel that they have. You basically you're stuck with the decision, correct?
Yes, that is. You get your process expedited, so it's not hanging over your head for 3 and 4 years. But what is decided is it.
Right. I'll tell you what. Why don't we get to the on the court stuff? And there was, to the extent we had games in, and we've lost a lot of games this week, as we already discussed, there were some pretty good games out there. And if I can get this to work, I figured I'd start. Actually, Grace, let me stick with you here, because I wanted to start with a quick blind resume. Let's get back into the college basketball.
Okay, the blind resume.
Well, we haven't done one of these, I think, maybe since the very start of the season. And I pulled up two resumes here that I want to take a quick look at here. Let me ask you first real quick, left or right, on just a very quick look here. Which resume, you know, is there a difference between these two resumes, or are they fairly even?
Well, you know, Iona there on the left is
that's not Iona. I will tell you that
that's
right now.
That's not the win against Alabama.
No, that is not the win against
not by 18.
Well, they don't have.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Either.
Okay.
Even good ones.
The one on the left tops out a little higher, but not by much, you know, 10 versus 25, especially at this point, how much of a difference is there really? I kind of think there's a little more on the one on the right.
A little more on the one on the right. Rocco, you agree with that? A little more on the one on the right, or you think it's about even?
I don't really like the bad home loss to 133.
Yeah, it is one bad home loss, but it's only three losses versus four. And you got an extra tier one win on the right, too.
I like the win over 10 without the bad loss. Yeah. I think I like the one on the left.
One on the left a little better. Well, I'll tell you what here, because the one on the left here is a team that people have been praising since the start of the season as some incredible team. The one on the right is a team that people are pretty much overlooking. Same conference. We've got Villanova on the left and Creighton on the right. And Joby, Villanova, at this point, they have played an incredible schedule. You look at all those road and neutral games against great teams, but at some point you got to win a game, don't you?
And they beat Tennessee. There you go.
Well, they've won one.
And ironically, Creighton's win over Villanova.
Yep. You know.
But it's an excellent point, Chad. We have time, but B, when you put the names there, you can actually analyze to a degree that deeper set. I think Villanova's losses are all just, you know, yes, you need to win a game points, but they're all excusable, because even, you know, the 22 to UCLA, that UCLA is not the 22nd best team. They're top 10 team. You know.
But Joby, you're looking at
evidence by the right, not the 57th.
Aren't you looking at blowout losses by Villanova, though? I mean, I want them in these games at least, don't you?
Well, they were in the Purdue game.
Okay, they're in one of the games.
But and Creighton, you know, I mean, Arizona State's awful. But, you know, the wins that Creighton has, you know, I think BYU and Villanova are very solid, and that's probably where they are ranked. But once again, give Creighton some credit. I think Iowa State's not a 14th. I think they could be fourth, yeah. You know, the way they've developed. You do have to get that extra layer. It will come out in the wash, but excellent analysis. And yes, they're pretty close, is your point. And I think that's a very astute observation.
Yeah. And it's a team that's barely getting any votes at the top, either top 25 poll in Creighton, and a team that's still hanging around in the top 25, albeit down into the 20s this week in Villanova. I see a number, line number 11 in the 11 team Big East there as we go to the Big East standings. But let's talk a little Big East. Dorman, other than Creighton's huge win over Villanova, we also saw Providence pick up a nice win at UConn this week.
Yeah, I was actually surprised by that game at UConn. They went in and they played strong and they were tough up front, and they beat UConn at their own game. They got back on D. They contested every shot. I like the way Cooley's got his boys playing at Providence. They're on the same page. Tough, strong. That was no fluke. That was a good win, and they're going to have some more coming.
Yeah. Another team that had a perfect week, Tytel. How about DePaul that had a perfect week, yet they took a conference loss, which may go away from what Rocco told us.
I'm just trying to get over the KPI that has DePaul at 40 and Villanova at 63. That's just mind-boggling right there. But, yeah, Coach Tony Stubblefield, he takes over a five-win team last year. He's now 9-1, only lost earlier this month 4 points to a good Loyola Chicago team. He was supposed to open conference play tonight with a home game against Creighton, canceled due to COVID issues with DePaul. Creighton wins by forfeit. Game will not be made up. Got to give a shout-out to Joby's favorite player, Javon Freeman-Liberty. Only player in the nation, 20 points, 8 boards, 3 assists, 2 steals a game. Unbelievable. And for those of you who enjoy an adult beverage from time to time, I think I found your new favorite player, senior Courvoisier McCauley.
As you mentioned, it was a forfeit. There was a couple of forfeits here in the Big East already. They may just become no contest. We will see how the conferences deal with this stuff here. But for now, we do have them on the screens of forfeit. Also, as Tytel mentioned, KPI numbers for the first time this season are on the screen here. Go ahead, Griggs, you had a comment?
Well, yeah, I was like, I think that because they now have a free game on their schedule, they should just schedule each other and play each other in a non-conference game just to make it even more ridiculous. I mean, if we're going to cross the line, we might as well keep going.
Griggs, well, I got you. Tomorrow night, I believe Xavier at Villanova is a go. And it's, as far as I know, maybe it's off. I don't know. Rocco might have canceled it on us in the last few minutes. Yeah. But this has actually been a very good series the last 10 years, honestly.
Yeah, Villanova's had the upper hand, you know, in recent years. But this year, Xavier, they've been amazingly good at home. They've played a few games away from home. This is undoubtedly their toughest road test of the year so far, maybe their toughest overall test. But Villanova, they've kind of, we talked about them already. I don't want to say that they've like been disappointing, because they haven't been. I mean, all of their losses are to either teams that are likely going to be one seeds or contending for one seeds, but they've been sort of, again, not impressive either. So is tomorrow the day they finally kind of snap out of it? It normally is when they play Xavier. That's when they normally get it together.
Let's jump over to another very good conference here in the Big 12, which still has a pair of undefeated.
I wanted
teams
to hear Joby's take on the Johnnies, because they did something ridiculous the other
day. Okay, yeah, let's jump back. Joby, go ahead. Johnnies.
I am not going to talk about Pittsburgh when we get to the ACC. I'm talking about the Johnnies. Okay. Oh, my gosh. You pull up that resume. I'm not going to take your time to do it. But just know they played every game at home except one away, which they lost at Indiana. They are the not even home court heroes. They're home court morons when it comes to losing. And so you look at St. John's. They had kind of a resume that was kind of, I feel okay about. They beat Monmouth, who's a decent team, and they lost to the teams they're supposed to in Kansas, obviously, in Indiana, you know, et cetera. They are not an NCAA tournament team. And Pittsburgh walked in and showed why.
Well, they were missing their best player, Joby. Champagne was out.
You don't lose to that Pittsburgh team. I don't care. Okay.
Chad, can I get you to pull up
the NCAA
Baylor
will
right
not give
John's
you a
here
pass for losing to the Stallings namesake. And maybe
I gotta take issue
the winner again.
I gotta take issue with what Joby is saying, because when you look at Baylor, like the top ranked team in the country, they do not have half as many tier four wins as the Johnnies do.
It is just remarkable.
If tier four wins are so easy, then why?
It's time to move on. We're going to
have more than double what Baylor had.
Tytel, how about West Virginia over in the Pac-12? In the Big 12. Let's put aside Baylor for a moment. The West Virginia, They picked up a very nice win at UAB, I thought.
Their first road game of the year, a 6-point win, a little closer than I'd like, but give Coach Bob Huggins all the credit. Career win 9-10. He's 10 wins shy of 10th place on the all-time wins list. They got a home cupcake on Wednesday. They take the rest of the year off, travel to Texas on New Year's Day for a huge game. There are 358 teams in D1 this year. They are 353 in free throw shooting, under 61%. It's eventually going to bite them in the butt. Excuse me. The defensive star this year has been Kedrian Johnson. Last year, 8 steals in 26 games. This year, 24 steals through 11 games. He's been all over the court.
Yeah, I think Rocco, it seems like the last couple of weeks, we haven't really spoken much about Kansas. And they struggled with Stephen F. Austin. It's not even your typical Stephen F. Austin team. This is kind of a lower Stephen F. Austin team this year than we've seen in past years. Is there any cause of concern here for the Jayhawks?
I don't know what to make of some of these games, because I think if you're as elite as Kansas is, you can play Mizzou, you can play Stephen F. Austin, you can play UTEP, you can even play St. John's, and you have so much of a talent gap that you can work on things, you can mix rotations. You know, I think, yeah, it was – and Stephen F. Austin, in my opinion, is one of the better mid-major programs out there, clearly programmed. But even this team, they got their top three guys to come back for COVID years. So it's not like they're not experienced. And Stephen F. Austin, those three guys, you got to remember, a couple of years back, they all got the experience of tasting a win at Cameron. And that was their next chance to repeat history, was there in Fog Allen on Saturday. So they got Stephen F. Austin's best fight. You know, I still think Bill Self's mixing and matching. And, you know, they'll get a road game at Colorado, which actually is the toughest place to play per Ken Pom in any home court advantage situation. So they'll have to go get it done in the altitude on tomorrow night. But in general, I think this team's elite. They got so many weapons, completely loaded, and I'm not as concerned.
You're not as concerned. Tima, Joby, I don't think there's anybody's very concerned about right now is Baylor. What had a very tough road trip to Oregon, almost a trap type of game, and they found a way to win it, which is what a good team does.
And you're hitting the point, Chad. You know, they were down at half. Oregon had control of the game. I mean, control of the game in that first half, which was a shock. But it's those type of games that should actually show the mettle of teams, in my opinion. On the road, they came back and they ended up winning by 8 points in it, you know, and going away at the end. Wow, this team they had their back was against the wall. They responded. That's the sort of thing come tournament time that they can bring and feed off of as they enter a gauntlet of a schedule in the Big 12 that will also most certainly prepare them.
Norman, one other team I want to discuss here quickly. Didn't think I would ever be saying this season here. after they were the worst power conference team in D1 last season, they were pathetically bad. Iowa State is a top 10 team this week.
TJ Otzelberger, I apologize. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, has done an incredible job with this team. He turned it over the roster a ton, but it just doesn't even look like the same program. I was a fan. I thought the Steve Prom whole thing would work. It didn't, obviously, but I did not see Iowa State firing back this quickly. They're a very solid team. I don't think they're running through the Big 12 like they've done their non-conference, because this conference is deep and long. But this is no fluke. Fully look for Iowa State to be in the tournament.
Okay, let's go ahead. Let's keep things rolling here. Upcoming schedule, first of all, they've got that huge test that Rocco already mentioned against Chicago State tomorrow night. The Kansas-Colorado game is the other game. Note, there's not that much with the Christmas break coming this weekend here to really look ahead for some of these conferences.
I was kind of disappointed. I was really looking forward to the Chicago State-Iowa State game because I thought it would pair a centenary candidate against a Stallings candidate, and that just isn't the storyline anymore.
Yeah, let's
teams deserve credit on that one, not just
they do. Too. Yeah.
Let's keep things rolling over to the Big Ten, which had a pretty good week. And I guess, Rocco, let's start with Purdue. after the loss to Rutgers and the struggle against NC State, they came out in the Crossroads Classic against Butler and looked dominant.
Yeah, I mean, the way they shot the ball was very impressive. You know, they came out, I forget the numbers, but they were astronomical, especially in the first half. I think they hit like their first seven threes, and game was over before it started. Also, right before tip-off, we learned that Butler's, you know, all their best player, essentially their guard, Chuck Harris, is out with a non-COVID illness, I believe it was. So Butler, Saturday was a day in general, as we go through each of these leagues, where I saw like for the most random guys missing from lineups right at the, you know, within an hour or less of tip off. And this was one of those games. So when that happens, everything you've planned, especially if it's one of your star players, you know, from a Butler perspective, it goes out the window and you're kind of, your players are delirious. It's even hard for the staff to get organized, not to take anything away from Purdue. Purdue needed that. And that will go down as a win on a neutral court that will matter. Because Butler has shown here in recent weeks when they're full strength, they're pretty good. And so, yeah, and Purdue's in general, they're loaded. I think they had a tough, you know, week the week before out in the great New York, New Jersey area. Thanks to your Rutgers team there, Chad. But long-term, Purdue should be fine. They're a bona fide top 10 team, completely loaded. But I do think in those two New York, New Jersey games, they showed some a few reasons for concerns, especially on the defensive end of the ball. You know, they really should have lost that NC State game.
Yeah. Another team, Titel, that had a nice bounce back, I thought was Indiana with their win over a Notre Dame team that had just shown a little bit of life by beating Kentucky right before that.
Certainly. They're like the anti-Iowa State, though, in terms of the predictive metrics all around top 30. The resume is not so good, especially KPI. But when you're only at 12 wins last year under Archie Miller, you got to be happy with a 9-2 start in the last ever edition of the Crossroads Classic last weekend. Only a pair of single-digit road losses at Syracuse, at Wisconsin, very respectable. They're dominating in the paint on defense, 39% allowed from two-point range, number two in the nation. As you might expect, junior big man Trace Jackson Davis has led the way on offense. And defense, though, his scoring exactly the same as last year, 19.1 points per game, exact same as last year. His block shots have more than doubled, 1.4 last year. Now he's leading the conference, 3.3 blocks a game. They got two home cupcakes this month. They should finish the month 11-2. They're looking great.
They're looking great. Joby, the top of the KPI standings, number one, is Michigan State. I don't quite understand this. I think that there may just not be enough data for the KPI to give us good numbers yet. Maybe it's where Kevin works.
But where did Kevin go to Kevin, school? Kevin. I love Kevin, but where did he go to school? Yeah, Michigan State. That's right. Come on.
There are three
tier on there.
Well, Joby, there are
Virginia number one in mind. Come on.
Joby, there are three tier 1A wins away from home.
Away from home.
Which I think might be the reason he gets them there.
Yeah, yeah. And Michigan State certainly has had a good year. They surpass the expectations preseason. You know, everybody was talking Michigan, not Michigan State. And they've rebounded since Kansas kind of, you know, opened the season, kind of boat racing them a little bit. And they lose to Baylor. No one's going to, as we discussed, no one's going to fault that. But, you know, they did take care of Butler the same way Purdue did. They have done a solid job by beating Louisville. You know, they've beaten, you know, they took a Minnesota team. I think the metrics are a little high on that Minnesota team. We'll find out. But still, they're taking care of business. Loyola, Chicago, Connecticut. This is a very good team. This is an Izzo team. They all have, like all Izzo teams, they're going to do well in the tournament. They're on their way to a protected seed. You know, I mean, they rebounded since losing some key components, you know, the graduation. You know, give Michigan State credit. They are a real program. They're reloading, not rebuilding.
Yeah, Joby, you said something interesting. It's like, well, yeah, they've got a good resume and they lost to Baylor. You know, no one's going to fault them for that. Baylor's really good. Yes, Baylor is really good. They beat Michigan State on a neutral floor. Why aren't they number one?
I would point out that in the J&G, Michigan State is 13. That would be a four seed. That would probably be where they are. Baylor is number two overall. That would be a one seed. That is where Baylor belongs.
Yes.
Dorman, I pulled up on the right there another team that had a very nice win, I thought, this week. It was Iowa with their almost 19-point win over Utah State. I thought this Utah State team had a little bit more than they showed. But maybe Iowa, who we almost started to forget about, maybe we shouldn't have.
I like this Iowa team. Again, they're going to be able to score. It's going to come down to defensive stops. I did see him play Iowa State. I was pretty unimpressed. But then, you know, they came back and they played Illinois. I thought that was a much better showing for him. And the Utah State's a big win. That is huge. That is going to hold a lot of weight to this resume come down these final 2-3 months. I like this Iowa team. I think they're middle of the road in the Big Ten, but it's a loaded conference, and that's nothing to be ashamed of, to be right around 4-6 in this conference. I got them in the tournament today. I think they'll be a tournament team come March. They got to get stops on defense.
Yeah, that Iowa State game, I think I almost was ready to forget about this Iowa team after that. Here's the upcoming schedule. A couple of big games tomorrow night. We've got Michigan State and Oakland. This is going to be a quality win for Michigan State if they win the game. This is a pretty good Oakland team.
Real quick here, we got Fort Wayne at Michigan tomorrow. I know Michigan, they just won a bye game against Southern Utah, but they blew them out. And this Southern Utah team, probably one of the better teams in the Big Sky. So it was a bye game, but for them to blow them up by 37, is Michigan starting to get it together, or is it just that they're just overpowering teams in home bye games?
I got to see Michigan beat a good team before.
Okay, fair enough. There.
Quick note also, some of these games you're seeing in the upcoming games have already been canceled. None of today's cancellations have made it to the screens. Both games there on Thursday, for example, in this conference are already gone. The Morgan State Wisconsin game, Central Connecticut Rutgers. Wisconsin looking for another opponent for Thursday. So if you got a team available to play, give them a call. let's jump over to the SEC though. And we got the standings coming up now. And Rocco, let me start with you again with one of the few remaining undefeated teams of the nation sitting up there at the top of the standings, LSU. I was impressed with what they did against a pretty good Louisiana Tech team on Saturday.
Yeah, they made some amazing halftime adjustments. They were really struggling in the first half with Lofton and La Tech. And what a cool venue that was. They played it in Bossier City. Not a common place for basketball at the D1 level. Place was packed. You know, I actually set aside what I was doing Saturday to watch this game, so I watched it pretty much start to finish. And LSU really cranked up the defensive pressure. They just have an array of athletes, you know, not just their starting five, but it goes like 8-9 deep. And even a really good Louisiana Tech with some solid athletes and an All-American potentially, it just overwhelmed them at the end. And, you know, they did get a lucky bounce on that game. Game was tied, I think, 57 up. And Tari Eason fired that three, and it just hit the front of the rim, bounced straight in the air, went straight in. So they got a little bit of luck there. But all in all, it was a really impressive second half by LSU. And they've got just such a laundry list of mid-major wins now. When you look at Ohio U, Belmont, Liberty, now Louisiana Tech, they pounded Georgia Tech. Wake Forest is a nice win at this point. So, yeah, I mean, they've done it against good enough teams in my book to be legit.
They have. And Dorman, let me ask you about another team here that really, I think, proved something on Saturday coming off of the Notre Dame loss that we mentioned earlier. Kentucky wasn't even supposed to play North Carolina regionally, goes out to Vegas, not only plays a decent Carolina team at least, but throttled them.
Throttled them. They looked really, really good. Calipari should be really happy with the way his team from that game to a month earlier in the Champions Classic. It looked like a different team. They really grown up. Calipari's got them playing good D, and they really took it to North Carolina in every aspect of that game, and they let them have it. And they didn't let Carolina back in the game. Very impressed with the way Kentucky looked.
They were impressive. Tytel How about Auburn? Going into St. Louis, had a tough game. If Perkins was healthy, this St. Louis team would be very dangerous, I think. But, you know, Auburn picks up another win.
A good one, even though it was by 4 points. They're 10-1 overall, only lost double overtime to UConn in the Bahamas last month. Good news, they have two home games to finish this month. Bad news, it's arguably the hardest schedule in the nation. They host a 10-1 Murray State team and an undefeated LSU team back-to-back. Only one of their top 10 scorers is a senior because they have super frosh like Jabari Smith. Must be nice to be 6'10", shooting over 45% from behind the arc, but also quick enough to have 19 steals through 11 games. I really thought Paolo Banchero had like the National Freshman of the Year award wrapped up. Smith could not only win that, he could be the first overall pick in July. He's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Griggs, I got to ask you about this Alabama team also. It's almost a week ago now, but after they had just looked so, so good, they suffered that loss to Memphis.
Yeah, and it was a blowout loss. And they had been looking so good, so dangerous. And we're talking, this is a team that looks like a one seed. And when you look at the paper, they have the paper of a one seed, or at least the early makings of it. They go to Memphis, and it's a Memphis team that hadn't really looked all that good or played all that well together, and then get blown out. And you're like, okay, well, you know, maybe it just wasn't their night. Some nights nothing goes in for you and everything goes in for the other team. But while it was a win, to have to sweat out Jack State the way that they did, that almost got my attention and made me sit up more than Memphis to, like, is something wrong with Alabama right now? They certainly have not, for the last week, looked anything like they did, you know, for the entire season up to that point.
They didn't quite look like what the team that played Gonzaga is what you're saying.
Not quite.
Okay. Joby, I know you want to talk about a 9-2 team that's not named Alabama in this conference. How about Arkansas in a game that wasn't even televised or streamed? I think they played it in North Little Rock, played Hofstra and what, Arkansas.
And they got beat. And then that comes on the heels of them getting absolutely, we use the term boat race, 88-66 would be boat racing. And Oklahoma did that to them as well. Arkansas. So then you go, okay, I have to reset. They lose to Hofstra in essentially home. Let's be honest here. Yeah, I don't think there are a lot of Hofstra fans in Fort Smith.
There's not a lot of Hofstra fans in New York.
and so they basically, you know, they have two really bad losses. All right, so why did we like them? Well, they were undefeated. But there are a lot of teams that can get undefeated, you know, DePaul, and fall apart. So really, what was it? Oh, they beat Cincinnati and Kansas State, who've had their moments. I think Cincinnati and Kansas State now have had their moments and will continue to go worse and worse and worse. And Arkansas's resume might deteriorate. And that 9-2, I don't know if in a pretty strong SEC, I don't know if Arkansas is going to hit 500. It's a real, I think they could be in for a rude awakening. The one bit of hope I have is that Musselman is a good coach. He can, you know, maybe this is just, hey, I'm going to circle the wagons over the holidays, et cetera, and get going. But there are major concerns for Pig Suey.
That's fair. I got one note to you real quick before we move on. Rocco, let me go back to you real quick. Mississippi State quietly beat two solid under-the-radar programs in Georgia State and Furman this past week. Do we need to start paying a little more attention here?
Yeah, I mean, I think this team reeks of the bubble, okay. You know, on paper and results wise, too. You know, I'm saying like their roster, they did a tremendous job in the transfer portal. Of course, bringing in Garrison Brooks and Rocket Watts and others. And now Rocket Watts is starting to get healthy. Jury's out on how much he brings to the table. I know Spartans fans were a little disappointed in him, but he's getting older and he's got experience. And this team with Iverson Molinar at the point, you know, they're a solid team. They should have beat Colorado State. They really let that game slip away. They had a nice lead throughout that almost entire game. And, you know, that game I was impressed with Colorado State's comeback, but I was also impressed with just how talented and how dominant Mississippi State was on the interior. So I'm really curious to see how they do in SEC play, but I think they're a contender. Not maybe not for the championship, of course, but definitely to be in position for a bid and maybe even a top six in the league.
Got the upcoming schedule for the conference. A bunch of these games are going off. Notably, Louisville, Kentucky is off. Kentucky said we'll be playing Western Kentucky on Wednesday. That was just added. Arizona, Tennessee, I believe, is on. And that is definitely one worth putting a major circle around.
Maybe Western Kentucky can pull the double. They beat Louisville.
They did.
And I don't know if Louisville, Kentucky is going to get to be made up. Oh, just a quick note about this game. Yeah. About a week or so ago, tornadoes ripped through the state of Kentucky, particularly the western part around where Western Kentucky and Murray State's campuses are. A lot of the proceeds, and maybe all of them from this game that's being scheduled, all of them are going to tornado victim relief. So good on both of those schools for getting that done.
Absolutely. Absolutely shout out to both of them. Let's jump over to the Pac-12, though. And we've got a pair of undefeated teams. Titelli, you are an Arizona alum. Your Arizona team 11-0. USC is 12-0.
Yeah, I talked about the Cats last week. Let's try the Trojans today. They beat Georgia Tech on Saturday. They head to Oklahoma City on Tuesday to face Oklahoma State. The good news, it's nearly impossible to score against them inside the paint. Number 4 in the nation, under 40% allowed from two-point range. Bad news, much like another team that can't hit free throws who we mentioned earlier, like West Virginia, this team is even worse. 58% is number 354 in the nation, which is sad because their coach, Andy Enfield, is literally the greatest free throw shooter in college basketball history. Speaking of Enfield, I can't figure out his starting lineup. He started Ethan Anderson in 6 of the 12 games. None of the 6 starts have been back-to-back. He's like starting, he's on the bench. He's starting, he's on the bench. Like, pick a guy and go with it. Come on.
Yeah, the not much else in terms of very notable wins. It was, I guess, Rocco, nice to see your Washington team back on the court this week. After about 3 weeks shutdown there, up to the longest COVID pause we've had so far this season for anybody, unfortunately for you guys. But
Chad, there's good news. Good news there because they got to avoid UCLA, Arizona, and Gonzaga, which were heavy, heavy underdogs in all three games. Would have been 4-7. They got to come into the Seattle U game 4-4, and now they're suddenly over 500, 5-4. Wouldn't have been possible without avoiding those three, I don't think. But yeah, in general, I think the league is pretty similar position as last week. Utah took a really tough loss at Mizzou. That does not look good. I know Brandon Carlson wasn't available, but Mizzou has looked so bad that I'm shocked that Craig Smith couldn't find a way to win that. Stanford had a shot with Texas yesterday, but Texas kept them at arm's length. So, and Arizona State, you know, we'll talk about the WCC soon, but they got snipped by San Francisco there. They had 2 shots at the buzzer to win it. Couldn't get them to fall. And, you know, Arizona State's all over the map. They won at Creighton. They lose this game. They beat Grand Canyon. And they're doing all this without Marvin Bagley. I think the audience needs to realize that, because when they get Bagley back, they're already starting to come to their own and be pretty darn competitive. These are good teams they're playing right now. I do think they have a shot to elevate all the way up to 4th once they get all the way healthy.
Right. But really, it's looking like it's a 3-team league, and that's it at this point in terms of the postseason.
Oregon needed that Baylor win, and they let it slip away.
And we've got the upcoming schedule here, Dorman, other than, I guess, we've got the Kansas, Colorado, Arizona, Tennessee games. Those are the games really worth circling. Stanford will be in the Diamond Head as well, assuming those games are a go.
Yeah, the game to watch, clearly, let's hope it goes, is Arizona, Tennessee. But to jump on Rocco's point there, this conference continues to lose out-of-conference games. They should be winning. Their conference metrics are going to be terrible. I was hoping Wazoo could be a 4th team in here. They are not looking great anymore. They've lost a couple of games they really should have won. Rocco mentioned Missouri and Utah. Just everything has gone wrong and bad for this conference. I'm with everyone. This is a 3-team race, and no one else really belongs.
Well, Joe, let's go
to
the –
Oh, I do ahead, not see Oregon. I was just going to say, I don't see Oregon State returning to the Elite Eight this year.
Joby, last year too.
Joby, let's stay out west and go to a better conference out west. How about the West Coast Conference, where we'll get to San Francisco here in a minute, but BYU picks up a nice win at Weber State, a little Beehive rivalry game here, and we've got the Zags and St. Mary's who still continue to play well as also here.
Yeah, this I'll let Titel go into San Francisco, but I think it tells more about Grand Canyon, believe it or not, than San Francisco, I dare say. But the conference is the same as we talked about last week. You have a group that's at the top, a group of four with Santa Clara kind of hanging around. I think Santa Clara, the loss to Boise was unfortunate for the conference because that was, if they get a win against a solid, not elite, but solid Boise team, then all of a sudden you have that NIT-ish type team that can bolster with solid metrics and solid wins. I think the net, it's right at 99. Had they beaten Boise, I think you're in the low 90s, late 80s, and it might stay there because of the conference mates that pull each other up. But yes, this conference is looking very seriously at 3 or 4. I mean, it really is. And who would have ever thought that that was the case?
Yeah, and San Francisco Titel is one of those teams that we are really looking at. Pair of 1-point games, I believe, this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the winning streak's over. It was an ugly loss to GCU in Phoenix because the offense just didn't show up. They made 3 shots from the free throw line and 3 shots from the 3-point line, and you're not beating anybody in Division I when you shoot like that. Somehow, the very next night, they had enough left in the tank for a 1-point win at the Sun Devils. They host SIU Wednesday. They finish non-conference play with a colorful contest against the Academy of Art. And then they start the new year with a brutal road trip at St. Mary's at Gonzaga. Point guard Jamari Bouye has increased his 3-point percentage during each of his 5 years on campus. Goes up every single year for 5 years. He's even got 12 blocks in 12 games this year. He's only 6'2". Who's letting him block his shot?
I don't know what else to say really about this conference because really got these four teams on the list. So a real quick look at the upcoming schedule here. I don't know that there's much really worth circling other than BYU being involved in the Diamond Head where they're going to start with South Florida. But then they may have the Hawaii game, which would be a true road game the second round. They might get a team like a Wyoming or a Liberty in the championship game. That's probably the one thing to really focus in on this
league. Yeah, you see this. Oh, I was just going to say, you see this Pepperdine Oregon game coming up. That's not one to focus on.
No. Missouri State St. Mary's. Go ahead, Rocco. Though.
Yeah, no, that's I'm loving that Missouri State's coming out here. That's gonna be a fun one. Hopefully, Missouri State can do something away from home. But we got the Battle of the South Bay tomorrow. Should be pretty interesting. Santa Clara finally back to full strength. Looked really good yesterday. And they're going to go play at Tim Miles' backyard at San Jose State. So the two campuses are only a few miles apart. And I don't think they've ever met in the NCAA tournament.
Let's move over to the ACC. At some point in the show, we got to get to this one, to the bad conferences. Oh, that's not even the ACC. That's the A-10.
A bad conference, to be fair.
That's also a bad conference. Let's go to the ACC instead. Dorman, over in the ACC.
I didn't realize we hadn't talked about the ACC.
We've got Duke. They haven't played a conference game yet, so you don't see them down to number 8 in the standing there, but the number 2 team in the nation. They picked up a pair of wins. Pretty good team.
Duke, yes. Duke is the class of this team, this conference, the ACC. I love Duke. I think they roll this conference. I would be surprised if they lost more than 2 games this year. That gets me on the point. I think this conference is very, very weak. I like Wake Forest to go to the tournament after this unbelievable great start, but we'll find out a lot more when they get into conference play. I do have North Carolina in the tournament as of today, but they're barely, barely hanging on. Louisville has looked awful lately. Virginia's back on my good side, but they obviously have blemishes. And I just don't see all these great teams coming from the ACC this year. It's not their year.
How about Louisville real quick? Joby. We mentioned
earlier. I've been on the Louisville bandwagon, and boy, I just fell through the floor. The Western Kentucky loss just can't happen. If you've had some nice wins, you've had some losses in tight games. You know, we mentioned the Michigan State game, you know, when looking at the Louisville, you know, Louisville Michigan State game was one that Louisville could have had and didn't. And then they let Western Kentucky do what they did. This is danger for the mere fact of exactly what David was talking about. There's in a normal ACC year is Western Kentucky's not the end of the world because you can make it up with a win against Syracuse or, you know, a win against Virginia. Well, they never beat Virginia, but a win against North Carolina. The fact of the matter is there aren't a lot of tournament level wins to get here. And so, yeah, obviously Duke, some others will rise to the top, but by rising to the top, they rise to the top by beating, you know, lackluster crap, and they avoid losing to Pitt and Boston College. That's not, you know, going to, yeah, it might get you in the tournament as a 10 or 11 seed, as David was pointing out with North Carolina. But Duke, I agree. I Duke would be doing the conference a favor losing four instead of two, because it at least gives maybe some teams that are fighting and could maybe sniff the tournament a chance. And Louisville would be one of those teams. But boy, this team, the inconsistency you see from them by losing to a Western Kentucky, don't be surprised if they go out and they lose to an NC State or a team or Georgia Tech, which would then bring their resume right back down after they beat a Duke.
Yeah.
Can I just jump back in here, Jack? Because Joby may, I'm sorry, on the ACC, but Joby just made the exact point. If you're not beating Duke this year in this conference, like, what do you have to hold your hat on here when you want to show the committee you belong? Like, the rest is not good. You have to be – I'm with Joby. You better beat Duke this year and not lose to the bottom if you want to have a claim.
A couple of teams I think are worth mentioning. Tatel, let me start with you. The team that is 11-1 there, mentioned them a little bit already, Wake Forest.
JNG seems to like him, number 34. Coach Steve Forbes last year won six total games. He's already 11-1 this year. Pair of single-digit wins last week over VMI and Charlotte. The only loss to an undefeated LSU team in a neutral site game last month. Great, great loss. They host BC on Wednesday. They head to Louisville next week. They're dominating in the paint on offense. 58% from two-point range, number eight in the nation. Even though Indiana State transfer Jake LaRavia has missed the past two games, no problem. That just means they can start five seniors on the floor. Unbelievable. The best senior, Alondis Williams. Past 2 years, he averaged less than 7 points a game. This year, only player in the nation averaging 21 points, six boards, and four assists a game. He could be the ACC player of the year.
I'm not all the way sold on Wake yet. I'm not calling fraud yet, but I'm not calling tournament yet either. As you said, they're 11-1, but like 10 of those wins were kind of unimpressive.
Well, at least they're winning games. And Greg Briggs, only other team in this entire conference that won a game of any note, I think, this week was Virginia Tech. And not only beating the Bonnies, but crushing them 86-49. Yeah. How about the Hokies?
I don't know whether to be proud of the Hokies or ashamed of the Bonnies. But after a game like that, and when you look at their resume, at least there is some notable stuff on it. I think that they've got more there than what most of the rest of the league outside of Duke combined has. You know, they've got Navy and
Maryland. Navy and Maryland.
Even less than I thought. Jesus Christ. I knew they had, that's still pretty sparse. But at least there's something there. And I think the Bonnies are going to be at least the top 50 team.
Well, when you look at things, though, Rocco, when you look at this conference game, to be a tier one win, to get a tier one win at home, you've got to be a top 30 team. There's only two in there, and Va Tech is barely even top 30 team. There aren't even tier one wins to be had in this conference. Maybe you get one of those road wins against the North Carolina or something, but they're not out there.
I mean, I think Carolina, they're probably not top 30 right this second, but I do think they should be by the end of the year.
We'll see.
The jury's out for sure. I thought after their 21-point win over Michigan, the show where they were at, but, you know, jury's out on Michigan too. So the talent's there, that's for sure. And then I think Virginia Tech, like, you want to talk about a team that can chip up, take a win off Duke. That's a team because 40% of the Hokies points come from the 3-point line. So they're going to have very high variance results like the Bonaventure game where they come out and they destroy somebody when they're hot. But if they get shut down from there, they're susceptible to a loss to like a Boston College or a Miami. So, you know, these teams are built a little bit differently. And yeah, it's gonna be an interesting race. You know, the predictive metrics have a lot of teams still in that 40 to 80 range. So there's room to just come right up and get above the bubble. But yeah, I'm curious. I'm not in a hurry to write off the league entirely because Duke is such a good team. And I think these other teams have talent. It's just taking longer for it to come together and meld for most of the programs.
The upcoming schedule, a bunch of these games have already gone off. The one, if it does happen to really circle with Louisville, Kentucky off, is the VaTech at Duke game Wednesday. Two teams that
that
have the best net in the conference right now. So we get that right from the start here. A couple of leagues to go through real quickly. The American, we'll start there, where maybe we'll get those standings up even. There they are. Houston picked up the nice win over Oklahoma State, Joby. You know, that I think that was that's a solid win for this program. And I think this is the best team in the conference, unless you think that there's someone else.
Yes, they are. And I don't even want to hear about the we'll hear about a game and, you know, and that was held in the pyramid, you know, later. But this is the best team and it's not close. And it could be, you know, it's like if you have A to begin your conference this year, your overall conference is really struggling. This is no exception. Houston is the Duke of this conference. There are only so many good wins to get here, and Duke and Houston is pretty much it. And we'll hear from about some others, but this team, you know, look at that resume. You know, they've taken the gauntlet out of conference. They were smart in that regard. They beat Oklahoma State, an Oklahoma State, especially when they schedule it, which is a very solid team. The losses are not bad, you know, when you're talking, you know, Alabama, Houston, that's a great game. So, you know, hey, this Houston team, they're going to be a protected seed because I think they will have a minimum of one or two losses, much like we were referencing Duke in the ACC.
Right. And Titel, we got to know here, first place, legitimately, not even by forfeit, first place in the conference, though, right now is UCF.
So we might as well talk about them before they end up last in the conference. They did have back-to-back losses a few weeks ago, but it's to Oklahoma and Auburn, very respectable. 3 straight wins, 7-2. They only won 11 games last year, so they're well on their way to beating that, I hope. Home cupcake Wednesday. They finished non-conference play with a home game against Michigan. How the hell did Johnny Dawkins talk Juwan Howard into that? You cannot win by fouling them because they're top 20 in the nation, 79% from the line. You can't beat them by making threes against them because they only allow 26% from three-point line, also top 20 in the nation. And I want to give a shout-out to Brandon Mahan. 3 years ago, as a freshman at Texas A&M, shot 62% from the free throw line. This year at UCF, he's taken 24 shots, and he's made 24 shots. I love guys who improve over time through hard work.
Yeah, there's not much in terms of upcoming games this week. South Florida is in the Diamond Head, but it's South Florida. Houston's hosting Texas State if the game happens, but it's Texas State. Team with a little bit of life, but I don't think it really would. But, Griggs, let me go to you, though, jump over to the A-10, where we talked about VaTech a minute ago. How about the other half of that game where the Bonnies now are suddenly not that slam dunk NCAA tournament team that everyone was talking about?
No, and that was probably the most extreme example of them not being a slam dunk NCAA tournament team. Like, there's other stuff that you could point to, but you can certainly point to that as the most, like, obvious. And I guess the question I have is, when you look at this league, I know you're pulling up St. Bonnie now. Clemson, probably not a tournament team. Marquette probably is. Is there enough there? And based on how they've been playing, I don't know that they win at Dayton. I don't know that they win at Richmond. I don't necessarily think those are tournament teams. St. Louis. But this was the team that we thought that would win, or I did, that would run through the table and maybe only lose one or two all year in conference and maybe one or two more on top of that, if that, and be ranked somewhere in the teens or the single digits. I don't see that happening. And I guess the question is, who is inside the bubble in this conference now? And I think the answer is no one. And does someone get there?
Well, Rocco, Dayton had been making a run.
Look at the Nets. Jesus Christ, there's – sorry, go ahead to Rocco.
But yes, yeah. Dayton had been looking a lot better since they suffered a few bad home losses at the start of the season. But you got to go and you got to win at Ole Miss to make up for those losses, and they couldn't.
Yeah, I think Dayton, the story of the season thus far has been – the fans. I mean, the fans willed them to three unbelievable victories down in Orlando, which was Miami, Kansas, and Belmont. They come home after that, and they blitzkrieged, Northern Illinois and Alabama State. And then you have the Virginia Tech win, which is a nice win. But, you know, in the middle of the week in December, not enough Flyer fans got down to SMU. They lose. And, you know, this weekend, not enough got down to Oxford and they lost a tight one. Now, of course, the caliber of play has been much better. They're starting to look a lot more like a tournament team, but all that damage has already been done before the gelling began, unfortunately for Coach Grant and this team. So I do think they're going to be incredibly difficult to beat in Dayton from here on out, despite the early struggles. But like you guys said about St. Bonaventure and a lot of teams in this league, I would say the same for VCU, for example, getting out of their home element with their great home court advantage is going to be very difficult to get quality road wins. And it's really going to take one or two teams to get hot and go on a big run where they get big road wins. But right now that opportunity is there for about four or five teams, but it's really hard to say which one will do it. If any will do it.
Yeah. Tytel, could Rhode Island be the team?
Possibly. I mean, I can explain their three losses this year. Tulsa by six at neutral site. I know it's Tulsa, but it's neutral site and it's single digits. 1 point at Florida Gulf Coast after blowing a 14-point first half lead. That's something hopefully they'll fix throughout the months ahead. And they lost to a Providence team who's 11-1 and now is ranked. They get three straight at home in the next 2 weeks. Interior defense, fantastic, only allowing 41% inside the arc, number nine in the nation. If their opponents ever stop shooting 77% from the free throw line, they might actually win some of those close games. And they're getting it done inside with the twin transfers from the Terps, Makai and Mikhail Mitchell, doubling their pleasure, doubling their fun, combining for 21 points, 12 boards, and 4 blocks per game.
There we go. Dorman, upcoming schedule here. I don't know what's on or not. I've heard some cancellations. I know, for example, the Brown Rhode Island game is off already. As is the St. Louis Drake game. So I don't know if we could get anything to talk about next week in the A-10.
I was looking forward to that St. Louis Drake game. So that's a bummer. And like Chad just said, all these good games seem to be on ice there. I'm not sure if they're going to go off, but I was leading the charge on the St. Bonaventure team weeks ago. I thought this team was really top 20 good, and I'm with the group. They've really struggled. They really need to pick it up. But Kyle Lofton is back, and he is a senior, and he's a guard, and he's the heart and soul of this team, and they rely on him for a lot, but really just being on the court and settling everyone down. If they can get hot and really sort of dominate the conference, I think the committee will look at where some of these losses came from, and St. Bonaventure still has a chance if they can run this conference and make a subs in the tournament.
Okay. Joby, over in the Mountain West, last conference we've got to discuss here, Colorado State still undefeated, although they did not actually get any games in this past week. So that's a good way to remain undefeated, right?
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Colorado State, let's face it, Colorado State is, you know, that tournament team that they've been solid. You know, last year, go back to last year, there were like four teams all around the bubble. It's like, oh, San Diego State or Colorado State or Utah State or Boise. Yeah, even the, you know, this year, I think Colorado State is clearly the class of this league. The undefeated record means something. The undefeated record includes a mere tier two win. And this shows that sometimes the net is off, a tier two win on a neutral court over Creighton. I would dare say that's worthy of a tier one win since we discussed them. And, a win at home against St. Mary's isn't too bad either. And a neutral win over Mississippi State on neutral court, not too bad either. They've piled up a nice, steady amount of wins. As long as they don't fall apart in this conference, which – you know, they can't lose the bottom half. I mean, there's some really drag in this place. But I don't think Colorado State will. They're too consistent to do that, at least on a regular basis. You know, you can afford a loss to Wyoming. You can afford a loss to San Diego State. As long as they produce a solid conference record, they are not just an at-large worthy team, but they're going to be wearing white.
Absolutely, I love this Colorado State team so far. Rocco, the key win in this conference this week was San Diego State going out of Phoenix and beating St. Mary's. On flow hoops.
Yeah, it was. San Diego State got it done. I mean, I think the potential for this team is great. If you're looking for a team that could take off in the second half of the year, excellent candidate right here. I mean, the Aztecs defense has not wavered all year despite the struggles. They've been in the top 10 in adjusted defense. You see right there on the screen, they're number 8 right now. And I mean, you ask me about any of the 32 leagues in this country, and I will tell you, I will always not give up on the best defensive team in the league. And San Diego State's been that team for about a decade now. So big win. They're back in the hunt for an at-large. And I think this league, you know, I might have said this last week too, so much improvement from the bottom. Like San Jose State is still undefeated at home. They just got their first road win.
So well coached.
And anyway, I'm just saying, like, this league in general has the most difficult trips. I think when you look across the Front Range and you look at elevation in Utah and even Colorado State as part of that Front Range, it's going to be hard for anybody to go through this league without three or more losses. And Colorado State's really, really good, as you guys said, but I still see at least three losses because these trips are brutal. And the teams are better almost across the board. So,
yeah. And what about
there it is, the Front Range standing. So yes. go ahead, Griggs, real quick.
Well, yeah, another Front Range team. And sometimes that, you know, we're so used to them not being good that maybe we're overlooking them. Look at Wyoming and look at their metrics. I mean, those are tournament level metrics. That's inside the bubble.
On the resume side.
On the resume. Well, yeah, on the resume side. They're somewhat lacking on the.
The Diamond Head Classic, actually, we haven't gotten into it too deep yet. But I think there's a lot of teams in this that have a chance to break through, and Wyoming's one of them. We're going to really find out a lot about them out in the islands. Hopefully we get all the games in, but I assume we will. I saw Northern Iowa and Liberty have landed safely, and I'm assuming everybody else can get out there.
For Wyoming, it's the Grand Canyon win that helps them with it. It's tier one right now. We're going to see. Grand Canyon proved this week that it shows a little more about Grand Canyon in that San Francisco game. We're going to see more about that on Wyoming. Can they actually keep pace with the Colorado States and San Diego States of the world? Because if they don't and they slip up, even though they're undefeated at home 10 miles, you lose to San Jose State, you're not keeping your 19 net very long.
Real quick, one more team, Tytel. How about Fresno State?
Only won 12 games last year, already got 9 this year, and a pair of 8-point road losses at Cal, at San Francisco. I don't know the record for the most consecutive games against one state. They played 8 straight games against teams from California. Sadly, the streak ends Tuesday when they had
to. I would imagine a Big West team has played more.
Perhaps. Coach Justin Hudson starts 4 juniors and 1 sophomore, so I think they could be a year away from being a serious contender. But that's assuming junior big man Orlando Robinson does not go pro next summer. How many 7-footers do you know? He shoots 80% from the free throw line. He averages 3 assists a game. And I'm praying he gets drafted by the Magic and becomes the first player in NBA history to play for a team he shares a first name with.
I'll tell you what. Upcoming schedules on the screen for the rest of that hasn't been canceled. Some of these games are, I know, already off. But let's go ahead and jump over to any other final thoughts. So I'll pull this down. And Dorman, let me start with you.
I hope we get these games in. That's really and I really want the fans in the building. The one thing last year that just tore my heart out it was watching these games without the energy and without the passion, without the love in those gyms. I love to see the fans in these buildings. Let's really hope. Pray everyone gets healthy. This country can pull through and we can get stands in the seats and enjoy the games. And I wish everyone a happy holiday out there. Stay safe.
Thanks a lot. And Joby.
Let me just echo that. I think that's the focus here is making sure, hoping for the best in what we're facing. The divergence, I will say, there will be a divergence when we talk to the conferences. How a team like how, and we saw it in football at the beginning of last year. Yeah. Or how, for instance, the Pac-12 will treat the situation will be very different than how the SEC does. And that would be make a very interesting and difficult job for the committee, particularly on the fans component. If all of a sudden, let's say, okay, we're going to go and, you know, we're going to have no fans in some conferences, but other conferences do. How do you reconcile road records in that case? I mean, it becomes very difficult in that particular instance. So this is going to be, we thought we wouldn't have the mess that we're about to face. Unfortunately, we're facing this mess. And I hope at the end of the day, everybody just is able to be healthy at the end of the day, and hope that what we're seeing initially is that it's not as virulent, but we don't 100% know. So let's hope.
Yeah, I think that's all we can do. Got to echo that. Tytel, how about to turn back a little bit? But I know there's something you want to talk about on the court here. Let me bring up a picture for you here.
So everyone knows our favorite R. Miller is Mr. Rocco, but his distant cousin is our second favorite, St. Thomas senior guard Riley Miller. Last year, this guy started only 7 games for a Tommy's team that wasn't even in D1. This year, leading the nation 53 shots from behind the arc in only 11 games. I don't know if he's going to break Steph Curry's all-time record of 162 in a single season. That was a 36-game season, mind you, back in 2008. As you can see from this photo, anything's possible when you have a magnificent mustache.
They weren't D2 either. They came up from D3.
I think the 70s called looking for that mustache back. But
I love that guy.
Rocco.
Yeah, so, you know, a couple quick hitters. First of all, I agree with Dorman and Joby on the sentiments, and really hope we can figure out a path forward that doesn't lead to half the games canceled and no fans. So, we'll just have to see how it plays out. I know everybody's working hard behind the scenes to keep things moving and find replacement opponents. And so I shared that sentiment there. I also just want to point out Western Kentucky, with the recent announcement playing Kentucky, it'll be the first time since 1990 where they got to play Louisville and Kentucky in the same season. So they will be extremely fired up, plus the tornado relief element. They played awesome against Louisville the other day, which was really cool for them because it's very rare for a Conference USA team to get a CBS nationally televised game. They got kind of fortunate with that. A couple games got canceled. They got moved into it. Great, great showcase game for that league and for that program. And then I would also just like to say, just looking at some numbers, very impressed with 3 Big Ten teams and the way they protect the basketball. 3 teams I actually didn't even have making the tournament before the season started. But the top 3 teams right now nationally in turnover rate, which is essentially if you're at the top, you're the best at protecting the ball and not giving away free turnovers, are Iowa, Northwestern, and Wisconsin. Top 3 in the country at protecting the ball. So very, very fascinating how that translates to wins. And those 3 teams are all in the hunt.
We've spent so much time talking about teams I did not expect to be talking about this season. But I guess it happens every year, but I almost feels like we're doing more of it this year than we normally do. Western Kentucky, if they could just get a game in against Murray State, they could become the best team in the state of Kentucky. Griggs, you want to finish us out?
Yeah. So where to begin? I guess I'll say this. About 2 months ago, I guess it was, I went to the Louder Than Life Festival. And
they let it puppets was an in?
I ended up getting arrested, but okay. Chad had to come get me out. But it was a COVID-free event, meaning that the bands had to test negative, or the bands had to be vaccinated, and everyone that attended had to be vaccinated. And there were 45,000 people there, and it went off without a hitch. And it got me thinking, what if there was a way to do that with college basketball, to where we could arrange it so we're not having to cancel nearly as many games or any at all, and that fans could come in and that the arenas could be full and no one would have to wear masks? If there was a way to do that, would you be in favor of it? And selfishly, my answer is yes. I think that the NCAA, if Metallica can do it, why can't the NCAA? Players, if they want to play, have to be vaccinated. Fans, if they want to come into the building, they have to be vaccinated. And to me, this isn't violating anyone's rights. I'm not the lawyer. There are lawyers on this panel, but we're not discriminating because of race, sex, or religion. And no, college events, attending college events is not a civil right. It isn't a right at all. So no one is violating, no one's rights are being violated here. It's just simply, if you want to come in and watch, or if you want to come in and play, you have to be vaccinated. And on top of that, we heard arguments for college football. It affects the players' mental health to not be able to play. There's more going on here. Well, if that's the case, then why don't we do more? If you really believe that, then why don't we do more to keep the games from being canceled and let the games go on as scheduled and let the fans go on, come in and just have a regular atmosphere? And I'm not saying, I'm not trying to force people to get vaccinated. I'm not for attacking anyone's livelihood or well-being in trying to force them to get vaccinated. But I don't think college basketball or any college sport at all is the makeup of someone's actual livelihood or well-being. So I don't feel bad at all in saying, for the protection of the players, for the security, for the stand, for the just stability of it, and for the safety of the fans, that let's do what Metallica did. You have to be vaccinated to come in. And the NCAA could do that in a week if they wanted to.
Well, you are assuming that the NCAA had any teeth to anything that they ever do. And that goes back to the very beginning of the show. You could rewind and listen to that at the beginning.
I've also advocated that for years, and you've heard me, that I think players should have to pass a thorough, extensive heart exam in order to be declared eligible. And that's not discriminatory either. That's a health issue, but whatever.
Right. Well, I guess on that note, this is our last Hoops HD report before the Christmas holiday. We'll be back after Christmas with our next Hoops HD report. We will have an under the radar later on this week, but I do want to wish everybody a healthy, and most importantly, a safe holiday, whatever holiday you're celebrating. If you've already celebrated your holiday, then just, pretend I told you this 3 weeks ago. But on behalf of John Titel and Joby Fortson up here, Rocco Miller, you can check him out at bracketeer.org as well below me, David Dorman and David Griggs to his sides. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be talking to you again real soon.